Most of you have been here for a baptism at Spiritus, and you know how it works. People get up there on the stage, the parents, godparents, and one of the parents will say why it's important that their child get baptized. Well, a Lutheran pastor told me that they do it a little differently in his church. The parents bring up the child, and then the minister says, "Who will stand with this child?" And usually the grandparents and the godparents come up and stand next to the parents. So one time he was telling me there was a single mother, she was 18 years old, kind of poorly dressed, her baby was fidgeting, so she put a pacifier in the mouth. It was just her and the baby. And the minister said, "Who will stand with this child?" Silence. It was awkward silence. Nobody moved. Finally, two elders came up and stood with her, and everybody kind of breathed a little easier. So the minister went back to his ritual, and out of the corner of his eye, he saw like a gay couple come up, and then a religious ed teacher and somebody else. Pretty soon, the entire congregation was up there with the child and the mother. The mother began to cry, and when the baby felt that water on its head, it became very peaceful and calm. It just seemed to feel the warm embrace of the whole congregation. Who will stand with this child? Who will be in solidarity with us? At Hanukkah time, unfortunately, there were some horrible anti-Semitic attacks around New York City. But last week, 25,000 people had a solidarity march. Jews and non-Jews marched together in solidarity. They held a banner up that said, "There is no room for hatred in this city." A Pentecostal bishop said, "An attack on any house of worship is attack on all our houses of worship." Solidarity. The non-Jews stood with the Jews. They weren't alone. Today, we celebrate the feast of Jesus' baptism, which is his solidarity with us. It was his idea to get baptized. It said that he came from Galilee to be baptized by John. So he wanted to be in solidarity with us. So Jesus gets in line with everybody else to be baptized. And you could just picture the whole line of people at the River Jordan. And they're all going to confess their sins and change their lives. So if you were in that line, what would you be thinking about? Probably the same thing Jesus was, that he regretted some of the things that he did in his youth. And we do too, right? Cracking up the family car or throwing a baseball through one of the windows or skipping school, getting caught using drugs or alcohol, stealing, getting pregnant. So Jesus is thinking about his past. He comes up to John the Baptist, and John tries to avoid the whole thing. "Oh, no, 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 you should be baptizing me. I shouldn't be baptizing you." This kind of reflects the embarrassment that the early church had. Because by that time, the church knew that Jesus was the Son of God. And if he's the Son of God, why does he have to get baptized? But it was Jesus' idea to be with us in solidarity. Who will stand with this child? "I will. I'm with you. I'm with you in your mistakes. I'm with you in your brokenness. I'm with you in your tragedies, in your sufferings, in your despair. I'm with you in your disgraces, your rejections. I'm with you when you're lonely, when you feel like a failure, when you're afraid, when you're depressed, when you're anxious. I'm with you." Solidarity. And he spent the rest of his life hanging out with sinners. He eats with them. He goes into their houses. He touches them. He loves them. He lets us know it's okay to be human. It's okay to be who we are. I'm with you. Jesus' baptism turns out to be a turning point in his life. After that, he doesn't go back to Nazareth. He doesn't go back to his family. He doesn't go back to being a carpenter. He doesn't join John the Baptist in his movement. He does something totally different with his life after that baptism. What changed? It wasn't the words of John the Baptist. It wasn't the ritual of baptism. It's something that happened after the baptism. He comes out of the water, dripping wet, comes up on the bank of the river, kneels down, and all of a sudden, Jesus has a vision. The skies open up, and he hears a voice, a very important voice in his life. "You are my beloved child, in whom I am well pleased. You are the delight of my life." And Jesus was so overwhelmed by that voice and that message that from then on he saw God differently. He knew that God was a God of love. And he went around convincing people that God loved them. In a small town, there was a man who did a lot of wicked things. He cheated people. He stole from people. He was a womanizer. He had parties that went on forever. And all the people in this little town were very upset about this man. Nobody could get him to change his ways. So a whole bunch of townspeople came over to the priest. They said, "You've got to talk to this guy. You're the only one that he'll listen to." Well, the priest didn't want to do that. But very reluctantly, he goes over, rings the doorbell, and while the man is coming to the door, the priest hears a voice from God that says, "Do not touch my friend. He is under my protection." The guy comes to the door. "What can I do for you, Father?" And the priest stumbles, I came here to reprimand you for your behavior, but before you got to the door, I heard God say, "Do not touch my friend. He's under my protection." The man said, "God called me his friend?" But the priest was already walking down the driveway. "God called me his friend? Me?" A month later, the man shows up in church in the back. The priest says, "What's up?" He said, "I don't know. Ever since you came to my house, my whole life has changed. I've given up all the bad habits, no parties anymore. I don't steal, I don't cheat. And I came here, I thought maybe I could find my friend." Have you ever been changed by somebody calling you something? Good or bad? Have you ever been changed by what somebody called you? It happened to Jesus. After he heard that message that he was the beloved son, he began seeing God in a different way. He called God Daddy, Abba. And he spent the rest of his life telling people how wonderful God is. And that's why he didn't preach punishment or destruction the way John the Baptist did. Hell and brimstone. No, not Jesus. Not wrathful, demanding, vengeful God. That wasn't his concept. He heard a different message that day at his baptism. So he went about preaching, forgiving, talking about God's loving kindness. The letter of St. Peter today kind of sums it up. He went about doing good and freeing people of their demons. He went about doing good and freeing people of their demons. That's true, and that's what we try to do here at Spiritus. We try to do good and free people of their demons. Their demons of addiction to drugs and alcohol and greed. Their demons of mental illness, incarceration, racism, poverty. We try to do good and free people of their demons. Our baptism reminds us that our identity is the same as Jesus's. If he was called beloved child of God, that's our identity as well. Today, people tell us to protect ourselves from identity theft. That's a spiritual problem, too. We're in danger always of losing our identity. To think that we're not the beloved child of God. And as I'm talking, there's probably people out here that are pushing back. I'm not a beloved child of God. If you knew what I did in my life, But it's true. That is our identity. We are beloved children of God, the delight of God's life. If we forget that, we will project our self-hatred onto other people. Bullying, name-calling, body-shaming, racial profiling, hate crimes. You know, people who are secure, people who have a good self-image of themselves, they don't do those things. They have no need to put anybody else down. They know they're good. They know everybody else is good, too. Some of you know the author Clarissa Pinkola Estes. She wrote the book Women Who Run With the Wolves. I heard her speak one time. Clarissa grew up with parents who were immigrants from Hungary. And as a teen, she got pregnant. And this was too much for her ethnic family to have a daughter that got pregnant. So they shipped her off to Chicago to a home for unwed mothers run by nuns in a very bad section of Chicago. The nuns cared for children with developmental disabilities. And pregnant teens like her had the job of taking care of those kids. During Clarissa's long stay at this house, nobody came to see her. Her family didn't come. Her friends didn't come. A parish priest showed up once, prayed with her, encouraged her. When she finally had a baby, they cut the umbilical cord and took the baby away. And she cried and cried and cried, and she grabbed the nun who was taking their baby away. And she took tears from her eyes, and she touched her daughter's forehead, and she said, "I baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit." 16 years later, they were united. First time they'd been together, the daughter and the mother. The daughter said, "All my life, I've had this empty feeling throughout my body, except for here." She touched her forehead. "It's always felt warm there." When we forget our identity, when we get down on ourselves, or when we forget the identity of other people and want to denigrate them, just touch your forehead, the place where you were baptized. And remember who you are. You are a beloved child of God, the delight of God's life.